Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. Well, I've had the opportunity to sit down and have some really great in-depth conversations with songwriters throughout my career, but I was truly giddy when my friend Shayna connected me with Lori McKenna for this podcast. Lori is that songwriter and artist that if I want to get all in my feels as a wife, a mom, a daughter, I just tell Alexa to shuffle Lori McKenna songs. Lori has this gift to take what can seem like the most mundane of moments and really make them matter in her music. She's a mom to five children. This conversation is one of my favorites. So here we go. So long before this podcast was even in existence or anything, Lori McKenna is just one of those people that I've always thought I would love to get to spend time with her. Just from getting to see you at Songwriter Nights, kind of becoming obsessed with your music several years ago. And then I don't know if you remember this, but when I finally met you at opening weekend of the Thomas Rhett Tour, Connor was opening up. And when I met you, it was like I knew you. I gave you the biggest, most awkward bear hug ever. Do you remember that?
I don't remember it being awkward. Was it awkward? I probably made it awkward. That was probably my fault.
No, it was definitely all me because I was kind of walking by and not realizing who Connor and TR were talking to backstage at Guilford. And Connor goes, "Mom, this is Lori McKenna." And I was like, "Oh." And just came over and immediately hugged you.
So well, it was just nice. I loved it. It was good energy. It was good energy. Yeah.
So one of the things that I love about your story, and we're going to go kind of backwards, curious to know if you'd agree with me, but I feel like you have become the songwriter that if there is an artist in this business that wants to tell a story that's super special to them about their child, their parent, something like that.
Or dying or getting old. Those are my special things.
Dying and getting old. All of the things that matter in life, that you're just the go-to, that you've become that. Do you ever get in a room and just wish, could we just write about a truck today?
Oh my God. I you know what? I do kind of panic sometimes when I'm in a room and they're like, let's just write the beach song today. And I'm like, oh, I'm not good at the beach. But I do. I love those days because someone else will bring, you know, whatever I have, whatever little I have about fun stuff in me as far as writing. That's what I love about co-writing is we all, you know, bring those things out in one another. But I do get that a lot. Like, oh, I saved this idea for you. And it's
thanks
about
a lot.
Somebody dying or something. But I kind of love it. It makes me feel like, oh, I must have like written something in the past that made them at least understand what I was trying to say in a song. And then, you know, because I do the same thing is if I think of an idea, I'll think of a person sometimes that, oh, like, you know, so-and-so would be so good at helping me, you know, get this out of my
so you might save chest. An idea like that for a particular co-writer.
Yeah.
So you kind of get that
so
side
when
of
people
it.
Do that for me, I do expect it to be within those parameters, but I'm always, you know, thankful anyway.
And a couple of the more recent songs that come to mind when thinking about that is the one that Maren Morris wrote, Hummingbird, with you for her child.
Yes.
And then the Briefcase song by Walker Hayes is really special.
He's so special. I mean, I love both those people. Maren was like, that was a love junkie day. And she was just discovering that she was pregnant. And it was really just one of those songs that just like had to be written that day. It's like when someone in the room has something that just has to come out of them.
Yeah.
And they're nice enough to share it with everybody. Cause there, I'm sure there's days where somebody's like not ready for it yet, but that was a day where she was discovering what was happening and probably planning a million things in her head and, you know, first pregnancy and, you know, first baby and all those things. And just shared it with us. And so those are always the greatest days. Briefcase I wrote with Walker Hayes was totally like all Walker. Like that was over Zoom. And that was just me being the person on the other side saying, oh my God, that's great. Or what was the name of your street? Or what did it look like in the kitchen? Or what, you know, what would your mom do? You know, like that, it's just like somebody like helping you drive the car. He was driving the car and knew where to go. And I was just like, oh, look at the, you know, like, look at the stop sign. Look at the,
yeah.
Just really on the outside of, help just the person there to, you know, to pick up something that you may have dropped that you didn't realize you said or something like that. And, he's a genius, Walker. What he does, I always get a little nervous because his phrasing is such a huge part of the way he writes.
Yes.
And he will go anywhere. Anywhere his heart takes him, he'll go all the way.
He's not as worried about the rhyming pattern or what the bridge is going to feel
he'll
like.
He'll make it work.
Yeah, he's just going to make it work. Yeah, I love
and,
that.
And I'm not that. I just always want to be able to support him. I love mm-hmm. writing with artists. Like both of those, you know, examples are great examples that really know what they want to say. Mm-hmm. And then you're just there. You're just, you know, the cheerleader or the, you know, the friend that said, you know what you said 5 minutes ago? That yeah. makes sense now.
And they're in like, some oh, aspects, maybe the counselor. Is that fair?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You have a different hat, like each song.
Yeah.
Even on the same day, like if you and I were going to write today and we were going to write three songs, each song, we would each wear a different hat. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like the song tells you what, you know, what, that's what I love is finding my place in the, I used to say in the room, but
in the room song. Or the Zoom.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. And it must be somewhat of an honor for people to be maybe particularly or extra vulnerable with you because they trust you to share these stories that maybe in another just typical Music Row co-write, they may not share. It sounds like these conversations can be somewhat intimate.
I think they have to be. You know, I think that that's the... And I'm really lucky that, I mean, all my co-writers that I get to write with, that's what everyone's goal is, you know, is to write a song that is truthful mm-hmm. to them. Because, you know, an artist has to sing the thing every night.
Right.
And, you know, they have to memorize 25 songs, you know what I mean? And every single word has to mean something for them for it to just fall out of their face, you know, like in front of an audience, you know, so it has to be as true as it can be. And I'm really lucky that the amount of truth that comes out of songs in this town is, it's really special.
It is special. Yeah. It's my favorite part of it for sure. So in order to kind of figure out how you became that person that is so trusted and that these writers can be so vulnerable with and the magic that you make in a writing room, I think we have to know a little bit more about you as a person. And there's so many different aspects. You're a mother of five, but you also grew up as one of six.
Right.
So family, and these are all heard in your song, the inspiration of family, your husband, your kids, even death. Some of those things are from your life experiences. But tell me about Lori, like as a child, were you always creative? Were you writing a lot of poetry as a child?
Oh gosh, I wrote such bad poetry. I think there's like boxes and boxes of, you know, my sixth grade handwriting, which isn't much different than my handwriting now. But yeah, I really wrote a lot of bad poetry. For a while, I thought I was going to be like a novelist when I was little. And then I realized I didn't have the attention span for that at all. And there was research involved. And I was like, I don't think I can hang this long to try to write a book. But two of my brothers are songwriters. So my brother Richie was like, just learn three chords and then you can write a song.
If you love good music and good podcasts, you'll love Roots Music Rambler. I'm Jason Falls. My co-host Francesca Folinazzo and I talk to the singers, songwriters, musicians, and more in Americana, alt-country, bluegrass, folk, blues, and beyond. We share our own takes on the latest news in the space and recommend new music for you to explore every episode. Come get to the roots of the music you love. Find us at RootsMusicRambler.com or go wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to Roots Music Rambler.
So being a songwriter or having the aspiration to be one didn't really feel that foreign to you because you had brothers in the family mm-hmm. who were writing songs. Like, are we talking about published yeah. songwriters, like had cuts?
My oldest brother, Bobby, was an artist and had, you know, some stuff cut. And my brother, Richie, was more of just like, does it because he loves it.
Okay.
You know, never really left the house with it. Just by choice, but it was just, which is a great lesson because it taught me, you know, you can still love something. You don't have to find, you know, commercial success in something that you love this much. It could just be, you know, something for yourself. Mm-hmm. But I think it was also the fact that I didn't know any other songwriters besides my brothers. I didn't even know anyone in school, like that was really in bands or wrote songs when they were growing up, like I was. And I think that in a way that was really good for me because from like 12 to 25, I wrote all these songs that nobody ever heard. And so I didn't really learn to edit myself to please someone else. So if I wrote a song when I was 15, I didn't have to be like, oh, I should change these words because if my father hears it, he might be like, what is this about? And I just was writing
just for you.
Totally self-centered writing
for
so long. It's not that like I felt lonely, like about like, oh, why, you know, like nobody wants to hear my stuff. It wasn't like that wasn't even like part of it. It was just like it was strictly something for me in a way that I didn't edit. I think if I had like someone had sent me to a songwriting class or somebody had been like, show me what you got, like really young, I would have gone down a totally different road.
Which probably is what leads to the fact that your songwriting feels so organic and untouched.
That's nice. I hope it does. I have to like pull myself back there and remind myself sometimes the it isn't really like people say are you looking at, are you reading it or are you singing it? Like, are you looking at what's wrong or are you feeling what's wrong? Because like I just stare at the computer sometimes. Oh, wow. And that it I have to remind myself don't look at it, just feel it and the best songs come when the melody and the words happen at the same time. Like I always say, they just like fall out of you.
Right.
Like my girl crush example of that is me saying to Hillary Lindsay, I want to write a song called Girl Crush. And literally she sang the first four lines of that song.
And that tune, that melody stayed the same.
Everything, like every single word, you know? And I was literally sitting on the couch with her this close and Liz Rose was right here. And we always say like, if we had a video of that, it would be like just amazing. Cause she was like, do you mean like that? Like and me and Liz are like, what just happened? You know? But those are the best ones. And you will get a certain number of those over the years. If you just like sit and kind of just like give yourself, it sounds weird, but like just sort of give yourself over to what's happening, you know, musically. I don't know. I'm just going to mumble. I'm just going to fumble over some chords and like mumble nothing. And then a word pops out and you're like, oh, I like the way the word sounds on that note and that part of the sentence. How do I get there?
Right.
You know, and that's my favorite.
I love that. And I think that that is such a key piece of advice because I'm sure you get asked that a lot. But man, file that one away where you just said, don't look at it, feel it.
Yeah.
Like, don't overthink the words, but how does it make you feel? Or I love that advice for songwriters.
There's so many lessons that I've learned about songwriting from co-writers that work in just everything.
Just life, right?
Yeah. You know, I just heard this thing. It was actually in a show about building homes. And the woman, the architect said, she was a dancer before she was an architect. And she said, I think as humans, we're all searching. And my way of searching was through dance. And I almost started crying when I heard her say it because it was like, oh, my way of searching is music.
Yeah.
And you're so lucky when you know what is your way of searching, you know, like just trying to find each other and find where we meet each other and how will we connect, you know, and for those of us that connect through music, it's an instant, you know, like we talked about writing with Connor and like, you know, being like, oh, hey, nice to meet you. Let's write a song. But it's an instant. I know you on some level
already.
Yeah,
it's like speed dating or something. Like you're just like, oh, hi. Okay. Now be vulnerable with me and tell me, you know, a story that
but the greatest artists will go there, you know, and I have children, a lot of children older than Connor, but it's like, he was, you know, a good artist and a good writer just, you know, when they'll just sort of just give up to that vulnerability. It's awesome.
Two of your five children are now pursuing writing. Is that something that you were in favor of and kind of wanted to help push them toward? Or I'm going to guess that probably happened organically too. They've been around it so much.
It did in a way. My oldest, Brian, who's living here, he came to me with me all the early shows I ever did because he was my three oldest were born when I started leaving the house with music.
You didn't play your first writer's night or bar show or whatever into open mic until you were 28.
Yeah.
So you had what, 3-4 kids by then?
I had the three boys. Okay. Yeah. And Brian was, you know, just always sort of adult. He's like an old soul and he would come with me. Like I would throw, Brian would jump in the minivan, you know, with me and we'd go all over Boston to open mics and whatever.
I love that.
So he was just always there. And my brother, Richie, who's such a big inspiration on me, is a big inspiration for Brian as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, all my brothers, my family is a big part of my career. My sister's a big part of what I do, but my family sort of pushed me out of the, you know, finally, like, I have a sister-in-law named Andrea, and she was finally like, come to this open mic and you're gonna, you know, get on stage and do it. And I always just needed those little, like, somebody to push me.
Right, right.
But I was still petrified, so I always brought Brian with me.
Well, that story is a little bit similar to Connor's situation of being exposed to and going with me.
Yes.
When I was interviewing songwriters, you know, full time for a weekly country music show I was hosting, but he was just so enamored with and fascinated with how things worked that there was no way for that not to impact him as a 9-year-old. And that's kind of the same with Brian being exposed, mm-hmm. and more than anything, maybe realizing that he could do that for a living.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And he, it's just always been part of him. And so he is, Brian's a bit of an artist. Like, he always had bands growing up, and he's very authentic in his own being. Like, this is how I want to present my music. And he would front these bands and play around Boston. And Chris, who's also here writing, is younger, and he would be like the drummer, or he'd play the keyboard, like whatever they needed in the band. Chris would just do that. Mm-hmm. Utility player.
Yeah, that's really
and,
cool.
And they made early on, they made a really good team. Like, they made a superhuman together, because Brian was very artist driven and we're going down this road. And Chris would be that co-writer saying, what do you need? How can I help you?
I love
What's
that.
My place here? What, mm-hmm. what do you need in this song? Oh, you need me to play a bass line on the key, you know, like, he would just find his spot. And, but I didn't know he was going to want to write and move here. He lived in LA for a while and then moved back home, and then came here to write. And they're both just, you know, doing such a good job. It's so fun to watch. I love having adult children, first of all, because I love talking about music with them and what they love, mm-hmm. and the co-writers that they meet. And I actually wrote with Brian last night, and it was just like, I called my husband this morning. I'm like, we had such a great, you know, it was a little bit of a challenging song too. And we like tackled it, you know, like we did it.
Yes. Yeah, so you felt know? Accomplished. Yeah.
Yeah,
so you have to make an appointment to write with your,
I mean,
somebody's a publisher somewhere setting up, okay, we're going to put you with this writer. It happens to be Brian or Chris McKinnon.
Yeah. I literally had a delivery at the condo that I had to wait for. So I'm like, Brian, what are you doing? I have to stay at the condo. Wait
for it. Just come here. I love
just
that.
Come here.
So your journey has been a little bit different, because I think most people, I think that's very fair to say, that want to pursue songwriting or an artist career. I've got to get to Nashville. Mm-hmm. I have to live there. I have to immerse myself into the culture of what it means to be an artist or writer in Nashville. How in the world have you made this work for you and you've kept your family in Boston? I know it's been a lot of commuting, mm-hmm. but can you tell me about that decision-making process? Surely there was a time where you and your husband had to say, do we need to move to Nashville?
Yeah, I think the easy answer is I've just been really lucky. So I got my deal because of Mary Gaucher, who gave my record to Melanie Howard, who's a publisher in town. And then she was like, can I play your songs around town? I had been here once. And I was like, yeah, I would love that. I don't know how that works. Like, and I didn't know anybody in Boston that had a publishing deal. And my first cuts were the Faith Hill cuts. So I had a publishing deal since that moment, which was like 2004, I think I got my publishing deal.
And didn't you get like 4 cuts on that first project, or 3 or 4?
Yeah, there's 3 on the record, and then there was like a bonus track.
It was amazing.
Back in the bonus track days. But yeah, and my son David was born that year, and he's 18, you know, and so it was like this, like a lot of juggling, and then I made a record for Warner Brothers at the time, and I just went back and forth, but it worked because my family, like I said, is amazing and everybody helps me out. It worked in the way that, I kind of needed the break of being home and not, I think if I moved here, if I just like picked up the family and we all moved here, mm-hmm. It would have been me wanting to write too much, because there's a thing about this town, this energy in this town, where you go and get coffee and you're standing behind, you know, Tony Lane or somebody, and you're like, well, what are you doing today? Like, yeah, I want to write a song. And I think I would overwrite. And I think I wouldn't have been able to stop myself from loving songwriting so much that I probably would have like run myself in the ground with it, along with raising, you know, the kids were all little.
Right. Like, there was never any pressure though from your publisher or from Warner or about, you know, we want to sign you to this deal, but you're going to need to be here in order to write as much as we need you to.
No, I was really lucky because Melanie Howard signed me for publishing. And she knew that that was the deal. You know, like I was only going to be here one trip a month at that time. Mm-hmm. And so every time they represented me somewhere, it was like, you have her for 3 days if this is what you want. And I really wasn't pressured.
A lot of people come to you too, don't they? Or have over the years?
Yeah, now especially, you know, over the years. That didn't happen that much back then because nobody really knew who I was. You know, I'd never co-written a song.
Wow.
I didn't know how to I learned to co-write, you know, from Liz Rose and Mark D. Sanders and people like that Melanie put me with when I first got that deal. I didn't even know like what that looked like. I think I had co-written one song with an artist named Josh Ritter up in Boston that's a friend of mine. And it was like, oh, this is a whole other thing. This is a whole new world. But I had a couple of I'm not going to lift my family up from their roots here and drag them to Tennessee and not know what is in the cards. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm not going to make anyone else suffer for my art. You know, that's my job. It's not their job. So that was like the deal. And of course I had to travel. So there was me being away from them, but I say to this all the time that I know I said no to a lot of things, but I don't remember what any of them are. Like, I don't like regret saying no to anything because it's like, it just passed, you know?
Right. And it may have seemed like a really big deal at the time, but to be able to say that these years later, that you really don't even remember.
It doesn't matter.
That's awesome.
What it was. Like, it would have been a very different road if we did that, or if I took that tour, or if I, you know, but the road that I'm on is perfect. So
yeah,
I'm happy with it.
That's so awesome. And I mentioned this in the intro, but I just feel like if you're a mom or a wife or just even, you know, your family matters to you, just, and you want to get in your feels, ask Alexa to shuffle Lori McKenna songs. Because that will
Does
do it for
work?
You every time. It works, yes. And if you do that, it actually plays not just your songs that you've recorded on your projects, but also songs you've written for other people.
Oh, that's
cool. Yeah, so it's really neat. And then it kind of really gives, you know, someone like me just the perspective of the depth of your writing and the songs and the relatability too.
That's
is I think really there, particularly for a mom.
Oh, that's,
you know,
good.
which is a lot of our audience, so I love that. Rumor has it though, you actually have a place in Nashville now.
We do.
So you're here so much, I guess, that
we bought a little condo and it's been great. It's I'm a home body. I'm a homemaker. Like, I like to clean things, which you'd kind of maybe never know if you looked at my house, but I do like to clean things. I like to nest. And so my manager, Beth Laird, like 4 years ago was like, you know, right before COVID, actually, she was like, you should just rather than, I used to always stay with Liz Rose.
Oh, you
and
did?
And then she was building, she's like been in like four houses since I've known her, and she's always building a new house or something. And so she was going through construction, so I was staying in a hotel each time I would come. And Beth was like, you should just buy something. You can sell it, you know, like in a few years, just like look for a condo and buy it and then save all these hotel fees. And what I realized once we got it was it's really part of my process is like getting up and having my routine and cleaning something and doing laundry.
It's really a home base.
Yeah.
Makes it feel like when you're at home.
It really helps. I think like when I'm home writing alone, I sit in the dining room and I do the laundry. I take the dogs out. Like, I'm constantly like any person that's home.
Yeah.
Is got five projects going on.
Multitasking.
And it sort of helps my brain like I'll find the line when I'm folding laundry or, you know, picking up laundry.
Oh, wow. Well, I've got some. If you need some extra inspiration, yeah. You can come over and
really
help.
You can't really do that when you're co-writing. You're like, I'm going to just get up and do some laundry now.
Do you have a basket of laundry I could fold while we consider this next line?
But I do like that process. I love that. I think it helps me.
You have mentioned the Love Junkies a couple of times. For people who aren't familiar with, tell me kind of how you guys became the Love Junkies and about that relationship.
So the Love Junkies is myself and Hillary Lindsay and Liz Rose. And at that time, I was coming to town twice a month, staying with Liz. She was when we first started, she was in a condo, this beautiful condo that she had. And I would just stay there for 3 days. You know, I would come in like I do now, like I come in first thing Monday morning, I leave Wednesday night. And I would stay with her and the publishers. Our three publishers decided, well, if Laurie's just going to be with Liz for 3 days, why doesn't Hillary just join for 3 days? And Hillary didn't have her daughter yet. She wasn't born yet. So Hillary was like, well, I'll sleep over too. And I had written with Hillary once and Liz had written with Hillary once. And they had a Taylor Swift cut. They wrote Fearless. I think it was Fearless together with Taylor. And but we didn't, all the three of us didn't know each other that well yet. And we just fell into like, we're all about 8 years apart. We were all in like very different like areas of our lives. We still are. And all of our weaknesses fed each other's strengths and all of our strengths fed each other's weaknesses. Like we just fell in line together.
An ideal situation for writing.
Yeah, exactly.
Different life experiences.
And just for womanhood, for friendship. And the first song we wrote together was Sober, which was cut by Little Big Town. Mm-hmm. And we were trying to find a rhyme that I don't even know what the line was, but that's where Love Junkie came from. And somebody said, like, we should name ourselves, you know, we should name our right, you know, because we like instantly fell in love. We're like, we should name our little team here.
Isn't that crazy how it's just totally become a thing too, though? Because, you know, I think even when I was talking to our friend Shayna, who helped set this up, she's like, yeah, she has a Love Junkies day that day. So we'll schedule it around that. But it's like a thing.
Oh, yeah. It's like the rule is like nobody gets in, nobody gets out. Like we stay, but we hunker down together. And we write from the minute we wake up in the morning until, well, I always say Liz goes to sleep, but when somebody falls asleep, it's changed evolved over the years, but the friendship has not. You know, Hillary has a little girl now that she has to bring to school and put to bed and all those things. But the friendship has not. We literally, you know, over lockdown and COVID and everything, we would get on the phone and just like three hours be on the phone. Just talking. Like sometimes when we get together, it's like, I don't even care if we write a song. I just need to sit in your space and just sit with you and be able to say anything.
Because of how deep that friendship's grown.
Yeah.
That's really neat.
And it wouldn't have, you know, as an adult, it's harder to find friends like that as you get older. But the music, again, it's like, that's the touch point. That's the connection. That's the piece. And we all know how to go right there. We know how to just be ourselves with one another because of this great job we get to have. And so it was just like a perfect combination.
So I think this is a Love Junkie song, but I have to say what kind of my favorite, I think it changes sometimes, but my favorite Lori McKenna song, but right now it is When You're My Age. Can you just tell me a little bit more about that song since I just love it so much?
Oh, thank you. That is a Love Junkie song. And that song came from, I have to think about it. I think it was David Letterman interviewing Howard Stern. He has a show called My Next Guest.
Okay, wait. Howard Stern inspired When You're My Age?
Well, David Letterman did.
That's amazing.
I think it's the Howard Stern. He's interviewing Howard Stern. But he has that show, My Next Guest Needs No Introduction.
Yes, it's so good. Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure it's Howard Stern, but I might be wrong. It might be Seinfeld or something. But it's David Letterman, and he's talking about the world. He's getting political a little bit, and he's talking about the world. And he said, my son's 14 years old. What's the world going to be like when he's my age? And it just like hit me like a ton of bricks, like, oh my God, when you're my age, like, you know, and that's all I had. And so I was home at the time and I wrote the first verse and the last verse of that song. And when you're my age, you know, I hope the world is kinder, like the verse. And I couldn't figure out where else to go or how else to get back. Like I was stuck and I tried so hard. I tried so hard by myself to write that song. I wrote it on piano, which I can't really play. But I tried it on guitar. I tried it on everything. And it over a month. And then I had a Love Junkie day. And it was, I remember Little Big Town, who's such a big part of Love Junkie's lives. Mm-hmm. Like we love them so much. They had an exhibit that was opening at the Country Music Hall of Fame. And they opened it up to friends and family like the night before its official opening. And we were going to see that at like 5 o'clock or something. So we wrote earlier in the day, and then we had like this hour where we're like, we can hang out and talk about our husbands, or we can take a nap, or we can like, you know, work. Pick at a song. And I was like, hey, I have these two verses. Can you just listen to it and see? And I played the first verse. And Liz, I remember looking over at Hillary, and she looked at Liz, and she goes, how do you know what she's singing? Because Liz started singing along with me, first of all. And Hillary was like,
I had never heard it.
And she looked at, I remember kind of catching her out of the corner of my eye. And Hillary was like, how do you know what she's saying? She goes, I know her. I know what she's saying.
She knows you so well that she knew where you were headed.
She's like, I know what she's going to say. She's going to say backyard now. And so like, she's like, she starts kind of singing along, which is like remarkable in itself. And Hillary's like, no. No, no, no. We are not helping you with that song. That is your song. Like, I'm not touching it with it. I don't even want to hear any more of it. You just go home and finish that song. And Liz just keeps singing. And she started singing the chorus. You'll outgrow your shoes. You'll outgrow your bed. She had just had, her grandson Jack was like 2 years old at the time. So she has a grandbaby. Hillary has a baby. I have 5 babies all over the place. Like we have all these different, we're in all these different spaces as moms. And Liz starts singing the chorus and the outgrow and all these things. And we still don't know how to get back. And Hillary is just mad at this point because she did not want to help. She just wanted me to do it.
Because she felt like it was so special.
Yeah. And I'm like, I just don't know how to get back. I just don't know what to do. Like, what's the hook of this song? And it never occurred to me that the hook would be when you're my age. And Hillary said, well, this is dumb, but you could say, and she did the whole hook with, you know, you're always be my baby, even when you're my age. And
the last two lines.
The three of us just, as soon as it came out of her mouth, it was one of those moments where you could see a thought that someone has, and it's a good thought. This is what happens in songwriting. You think it's a good thought, and you just pray that by the time it gets out of your mouth, connected and made sense.
Right.
By the time it gets out. Because a lot of times you think it's a good thought, and by the time your mouth says it, wait a minute, I'm sorry, that didn't work. But this was a moment where we could, Liz and I saw it happen with her. She was like, this isn't going to be good. And when it came out, it was magic. It was perfect. But there was so much that I love that song so much for the three of us because I could not have done that without Liz being just a genius and knowing exactly what I wanted, like knowing more than I did what right. I needed. And then Hillary reluctantly saving it all, you know,
kind of tying it up with
the
bow.
And then we all just cried. We literally just cried.
Oh, wow.
And
I like the story because of how it sounds like each of their life experiences and yours kind of all combined together and what that song ended up being.
Yeah. Yeah. And it needed three moms and three different, you know, life situations.
Yeah. And stages of life.
Yeah.
That's so neat. Tell me a couple of lines from any of your songs that are the most real when it comes to your kids. Like I hear sneaking out a window. I hear like, are there some lines in there that you've lived as a mom?
We get a lot of that sneaking out windows. my favorite story about that I can think of at this very moment in Humble and Kind, there's a thing about, there's a difference between sleeping with somebody and sleeping with someone you love, literally came from, one of my kids. I won't tell you which one, but literally it was one of those early morning flights, and David, my youngest, was still quite young,
And I was like sneaking into down in the basement where the playroom is and the great room is. And there's a refrigerator down there with like the juice boxes at the time. And I was like sneaking down to go get those to leave on the counter before I left for a trip. And one of my kids that didn't even live with me is like on the couch with some woman that I've never seen before. It was like 4 a.m. and I was like, who are those people? And then I got to the airport and called my husband. I'm like, there's the kids in the basement and there's a girl there, a woman that I've never seen before.
They're together on a couch.
And that's where kind of that came from. And because that, you know, it was, the story goes that, you know, my husband got up and was like, you better get out of here before the little kids come down.
Super, super smart. But, okay, now we get to the real story behind Humble and Kind. Because most of the time when I've heard you share, you know, about that have been how you, you know, were just doing this beautiful mother thing of sitting in a chair and writing down all the things that you wish your kids have known. But now we know.
That one was that a little line. Bit of a, okay, you don't even live here anymore.
I can only imagine the conversation.
I haven't met your friend yet, so out you go. But that song, I did want to make sure I had something for each of the kids. And there's so much of, you know, hold the door, say please, say thank you. Because David was only 10. My youngest was 10 at the time. And there's so much of that. Like, how many times do we say that to our kids?
Yeah.
And that the repetitiveness of that. And the I needed it to be, like, really simple and just, you know, basic in some lines, and I wanted it to be really like older in other lines.
To where you could kind of, the lines would apply to any of the kids, yeah. even though this, the span was probably what, 10 to 20 something at the time.
Yeah.
Right?
There's 15 years between my oldest and my youngest. Okay. So, but that was the line that McGraw said like sort of was like, okay, I'm going to cut this off.
Did he change anything in that song?
No, he didn't. In fact, I changed something in that song after he cut it, because I made a work tape. The day I wrote it, I just sang it in my phone. And
okay, the version on your album,
yeah,
it's a little bit different, isn't it?
Because I had trouble with the phrasing. And the last line is, when you get where you're going, I originally said, don't forget, you know, turn around and help the next one in line.
Yes.
And when I went to cut the song, I just stumbled over the phrasing of it. And I took out the don't forget part.
Okay.
And I do get in trouble with that sometimes, because if I'm singing it for an audience that knows, thankfully, most of the audiences know, at my shows, they know my version of it along with Tim's. But if I'm opening for Miranda or somebody, mm-hmm. the audience sings back, which is like this incredible moment for any singer.
Yeah.
I have to remember that they know Tim's version.
They're going to add that part.
Yeah, that's the original work tape. Mm-hmm. And by the time I cut it up like a year after he did, or a few months after he did, okay. and sort of stumbled over it.
I love how you casually, like, you know, if I'm opening for Miranda Lambert or something, like,
well,
I mean, you've had some incredible opportunities beyond
and there's
the
so
success
much
as a songwriter.
I hope I said that clearly earlier. Like, I've just been like so, and like just incredibly lucky. And I always met the luck with work. I will do the work.
Yes.
But I love what I do. I'm lucky and I'm willing to work for it. And when you put those things together, you're gonna, you know, just be able to look back on a career that was, you know, a blessing, you know, especially in music. It's so fun.
Well, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Lori. She is just the coolest. We want to thank everyone for listening and encourage you to join our Got It From a Mama Insider group. You can find the link to subscribe on our Instagram page. Follow us at @gotitfrom_mymama. That's MOMMA. Have a great week, everybody.